Hello, welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life in the sweltering heat. I am Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
In the heart of humidity. Not so much this week, more last week.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It's drying out.
We are
the
show.
We got a good breeze. Sorry.
It's okay.
I'm walking all over you now.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication and the internet. And today, foods.
Food. Yes, at many foods. Foods of all kinds. Our guest, Anna Bronis, is here. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You were saying you don't do a lot of podcasts, so...
No, actually, I mean, I've been interviewed for radio stuff before, but I think this is my first official full
there
podcast.
There we go. Congratulations. Yeah, so. Welcome to the podcasting world.
Wow.
You just released The Culinary Cyclist on, is LE Blue Publishing is the publisher?
Yep.
Which is to be separated from the Taking the Lane
yep.
Publishing house, but related because LE Blue is yep. LE Blue.
Well, and she's rocking it. She wants to get more into books, which is rad.
Yeah. And all of the things that she has produced to date are amazing things, and this book is no exception. So thank you for coming in and joining us.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, we'll be covering that. We're actually going to be stepping away from the microphones and into the kitchen in a little bit to make a beautiful thing that
avocado
is going to taste good.
And egg something.
Yeah.
What was it titled in the book? Do you remember?
No idea. No. I think it's actually a baked egg and avocado.
Okay.
And I picked it because it has turned out to be sort of anybody that makes a comment about making a dish from the book, it's definitely that one. I think one, because it sounds funky and it looks kind of cool and it's really simple.
Like you would pay upwards of $11 for this at a brunch place.
Definitely.
Certainly. I would think.
Yeah.
And yet, avocados are cheap, kind of.
Eggs are also fairly cheap.
Yeah. And this is, let's see, I was going to say, taking time for breakfast is not the name. But yes, baked egg and avocado on page 21 of the book is what it was called. Yeah. And I believe we're going to be doing the, let's see, parsley and goat cheese crumbles. Okay.
Well, in the book, there's a couple of recommendations.
Oh, okay.
Because personally, in my own kitchen, I use recipes for inspiration, and then after that, I sort of like diverge and dose something completely different.
Let's try this.
So in the book, it was sort of like, well, here's a couple of ideas of what you could put with this, but just have at it in terms of getting creative.
Right. So. It's not so much prescriptive as this is not your Betty Crocker saying,
definitely
like, you know,
not, no.
5 cups of name brand this and 2 teaspoons of name brand that. This, it's actually, I don't believe you refer to any brands at all, which is probably safe.
Yeah, I don't think so. Well, there is a recipe for homemade Nutella in there.
Oh, okay.
Because, which then the recipe is actually called, you know, I tried to fancify it a little bit.
Yes.
So I think it's called
Ella's Nut
Chocolate
Butter.
Hazelnut spread with sea salt.
There we go. You know, yeah.
Just throw sea salt on anything and it makes it fancier immediately.
Right. Right. And there's actually also in here somewhere there was, chocolate sea salt cake on page 83, which that sounds pretty good.
That's
as well.
That's also a favorite, yeah.
And I forget which one comes first. Do you use the nut confection in the chocolate sea salt cake?
No, those are two separate things.
Okay, so. That's right, yeah. That sounds really, really, really exciting. So... We're going to get to the kitchen in a little bit. But Aaron, you have some professional kitchen experience, don't you?
A couple.
You used to make a damn good Reuben, as I understand.
That's right. Yes. Best Reuben in outer Pittsburgh.
Yeah. This was a couple years ago.
Yeah. I was a short order cook at a bar, really small bar in the basement of what used to be a hotel kind of bed and breakfast thing. But that that end of it shut down, but the bar kept running.
Okay. As they often do.
Yeah.
Because there's money to be had in selling liquor, but not necessarily in renting space.
Yes, there's always money in the liquor stand.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
In the banana daiquiri stand.
That's right.
Yeah. So how long did you do that?
About a year.
Okay.
And then several years later, spent a year working nights as a baker.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. For a to be unnamed large chain.
Until that corporation calls me back and says they're going to sponsor us and throw us some free bread.
Right. Then we'll say who they are. But
yeah. I'm holding out.
Well, it starts with pan and ends with something else, I think. So.
Right.
Yeah. Draw your own conclusions.
It's very similar to a very popular thrash metal band.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Whose guitarist was famous for his pink goatee.
Oh, sure. So remove the tea. Remove the Earl Grey.
Yes.
And you have an era of bread.
Yes.
And that's as specific as we'll get.
There we go.
So, hey, we're drinking some beer, and you're not drinking anything. Do you want that Fentimans in the fridge?
I got it.
Oh, you did. Okay, there we go.
I got said Fentimans right here.
So we have the Migration Red, and I don't remember the full proper name for this beer. I'm sorry. But it's a red beer from Migration Brewing, and they are pretty good. My wife actually spent the weekend, I was working on the weekend quite a bit, and so she went out with some friends to watch the Timbers game. And apparently, at Migration, they will give you happy hour prices during the game, but it doesn't start until kickoff. So if you order your stuff before kickoff, full price.
Oh, yeah.
Just so you know, if you ever decide to go out and get a beer at...
So wait till kickoff.
Yes, yes. Don't order your stuff until after the ball's in motion.
All right.
But... yeah.
So what about the coin toss?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a good question.
Is it the actual kick?
right.
Is it like the football contact?
Yeah. I think kickoff is the word that I heard.
Okay, well.
Sorry, and Mr. Dittus. We took that order right before the foot hit the ball.
Right. Well, and I apparently they were pretty technical about it when, because I think the Timbers were already on the screen, but the kickoff had not yet taken place. So. Okay. Major League Soccer, if you don't know which part of the game you're looking at, you could be in trouble, or at least you could at least be spending more on beer. But yeah, it sounds like a cool deal. So next time the Timbers play, I would like to go there and get cheaper drinks. It's also a great little hidey hole. It's up on like
cool
Gleason.
Space.
Yeah,
it's
you've
really
been
cool
there.
Space. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really nice in the summer too because the outside area is really nice.
Totally. Yeah, they have a fantastic patio, and more and more places are developing wonderful patios in this town. A patio is one of my favorite places to take in a cool evening or a hot day if there's good awning space or umbrellas or whatnot. And they have those. So anyways, red. And then you have, this is an unusual one,
this
right?
This is very unusual.
Fentimans.
A Fentimans. That was actually a pretty anticlimactic opening there.
Oh, it sounded good.
Oh, okay.
The sound balance was right in my ears.
Never mind then. this is a Fentimans Dandelion and Burdock.
That's right.
Drink. Smells funny.
Do we know what
burdock is? It smells like dandelion,
is?
Actually.
Okay.
I don't know what burdock is.
Yeah. Anna, do you have any guesses?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But I was just going to say it's like a Ray Bradbury book, you know, dandelion wine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. So we've got,
Do dandelions dream of electric sheep?
Well, cheers anyways.
Cheers.
Cheers to podcasting and beverages.
Yes.
And
oh, God.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh.
But not to that one.
It like starts off really good and then ends with this weird, funny.
Is it the dandelion?
It's the dandelion.
It's a little bitter.
Or is it the burdock?
Oh, it's good.
It could be if I knew what burdock was.
Well, I think of it as, for some reason, it reminds me of like bark, which is probably not true, but maybe a root or something.
It like coats your tongue in
film?
Oil of ole.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you'd have a really pretty tongue.
It tastes like grandma smells.
That's not a phrase I wanted to hear.
No.
That's kind of rough.
That's the title of my next book, actually.
Where you just bag on like cookbooks from the 50s.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my kitchen when I was growing up was stocked with the Betty Crocker cookbook and many like it, where they've just said, take like parquet margarine and fill your pan with it and then it'll sponsor your
show.
This
was the healthy cookbook.
Right, yeah. Right. And then like, add Jell-O and macaroni and mayonnaise. And it was just things like that.
Yep.
And very much, I think, probably inclined to make you buy things that were also made by the same food producer. So you get parquet margarine, then you end, I don't know, whoever else was owned by their conglomerate. You would probably have to go out and buy.
Well, that's all General Mills.
Oh, there we go. Okay,
I think so. I think that's a Betty Crocker.
Okay, so you would go out and buy, like, is Quaker Oats General Mills? I can't remember.
I think so.
So yeah, they would tell you to buy Quaker Oats, trademark.
Which
registered
makes sense.
Trademark.
It's good
marketing.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Right. Yeah. So that was kind of my experience. And I remember... making pies was one of the things I liked when I was a kid because, you get your hands in the dough and then once the pie is made, there's all these leftover scraps. So you take like a little tiny bit of apple and the sugar sauce and you make your own tiny little crust that you put into like a bottle cap or something and put it in the oven with the real pie. And then when you pull it out, you've got like, this tiny pie that was baked along with the big pie and you felt awesome. So
were you making your own dough?
I don't think so. I wasn't actually making much. I was kind of standing around as my mom performed the ceremonies. So, yeah. I think I remember doing things. I don't know, Aaron, if this is the case for you or not, but as I was kind of growing up, I learned how to be a sous chef. but I never actually learned how to prepare food. So anything that involves heat or even mixing and measuring kind of sometimes freaks me out.
Sure.
So just so you know what you're dealing with as we go into the kitchen.
Like you can cut things apart. You can like arrange things.
Right.
Or measure things, but you won't apply heat to them.
And right.
Mix them.
So you're a raw foodist.
Not necessarily. Raw is, does raw count if you don't cook it, but somebody else does? Probably not. I do remember when I moved to college, my mom sent me there with a frying pan. It was one of those Teflon pans. And we ended up, she taught me how to fry an egg and how to put that into a tortilla and turn that into like an egg quesadilla sort of thing. And so that's been one of my staples. That's actually just in the past month or so, I've started making those for breakfast again.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you've actually moved on to something else.
Just in the past month.
Just recently.
I've started making my own food for myself again.
I've replaced the tortilla with toast.
Yeah. Well, the plus side of a tortilla is that you don't have to use the toaster.
True.
So, yeah. The point of all that being that I'm not all that comfortable with food, and I've always lived around people who were good with food. So that kind of, I was never forced
into the kitchen.
That enabled
your ineptitude. In
yes,
a way. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. I've been surrounded by enablers most of my life. So that's my background. You, of course, you're more comfortable with a griddle and a pan.
I'll enable anybody's ineptitude.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
No, it's a terrible habit of mine. Seriously.
Oh, yeah? Just walk in and take
over?
In
the kitchen. And, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was kind of a stress in a past living situation where one of the guys who is famously bad at cooking, he would be there in the kitchen, and it would be his turn, you know, because we'd all take turns making dinner for each other.
Okay.
It'd be his turn, and he's, you know, kind of all thumbs. And, you know, I'd walk in, nothing else to do, and so then I'd just take over, and he would slowly kind of
phase
himself out.
And there was never, like, an agreement or anything. It wasn't like, oh, no, here, let me do that for you. It was just, like, you just kind of sidle in and be like, there's
could
a
be,
spatula.
And it could be, he could draw me in with just something like, you know, hey, do you know where the onions are? And I'd be like, you know, I would just take right over. Oh, yeah, they're right here. Here, let me chop that for you. Okay, right. I'll throw that in. No, don't, not too much heat there. Let's use this oil instead. And
right.
It was pretty bad.
Okay, yeah.
I enabled his ineptitude, and yeah, we didn't grow, I guess is a good way to put it.
Okay, yeah, so it goes.
We didn't learn much.
Right. The dysfunctional family remained a dysfunctional family.
In that realm, anyway.
Yeah. But at least you were eating.
That's true.
That is good. Yeah, that's better than not. Yeah.
We ate well.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing that's made me think about food recently is in the past 3 months, I was counting them up, I have been trying to lose some weight. I have lost 20 pounds since May, and I've been doing that by calorie
ass.
County.
Yeah.
Counting, yes. And it, I don't know, it wasn't bad, but I'm still not that great at eating healthily. And as I was like, just about an hour ago, I was thinking thoughts to myself about the upcoming show. And I thought to myself, so if I was better at eating vegetables and eating a proper mix of foods in my diet, I probably wouldn't have as hard of a time losing the last five. Because my goal was like about 25 pounds off. And the last five have been hanging on for so long. So we shall see. But that I assume, like, if you eat the right foods and maybe the ones that you're kind of designed to eat as opposed to the ones that are designed to be eaten by General Mills, say, or something like that.
And Jiffy Mix.
Right. Like, your body will function normally as opposed to putting away a bunch of calories that you don't need.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a thing that I've been trying to shift toward. And one of those things is making my own egg quesadilla thing in the morning. But I do use a lot of cheese, which I'm assuming that doesn't help. So that's step two.
All things in moderation.
Yeah. Right. And cheese is great. But say hi to Adele and Angela who are walking through. How's it going? This is Anna. Anna wrote The Culinary Cyclist.
Nice to meet you.
Adele's my wife, by the way. So did I say that already? I don't know if I did.
Kind of.
This is going to be fascinating radio for anybody listening. It's awesome. I would like to ask you, Anna, how did you grow up around food, and did you extend your trajectory into healthy eating and a good relationship with food from a good standpoint that you grew up with, or did you make a radical change at some point in your life?
Well, let's put it this way. I was always the kid that had, like, sprouts in her sandwich at the ripe old age of 7, which at the time was quite embarrassing. Nowadays, I'm very thankful to my mother for doing so, but all I wanted to do at the time was get school lunch and get a sloppy Joe, which was just out of the question.
Well, and they make them look so good.
They do. They do. No, but my mother's actually Swedish, so I think for her... there was sort of no option for this sort of standard American diet. It was all whole foods, all, you know, vegetables, very just sort of basic, all home cooked.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always grown up with that, and I didn't really think anything of it.
Right.
I didn't think that that might be strange.
Yeah.
Well, besides the sprouts.
But. The sloppy Joe was tempting, but you weren't...
And we always ate together as a family for dinner, mm-hmm. which is also nowadays... uncommon.
It's harder to come by.
Most people are very busy living very busy lives. So it's, you know, very common to eat ramen standing up in the kitchen by yourself.
I've done
on
that.
Your own time schedule.
It's true.
I mean, it happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we always had breakfast together in the morning before school as a family.
Yeah.
Which was very important to my mother. And that's a very typical Swedish thing. I mean, if you say to a Swede, well, yeah, most Americans don't eat dinner together in the evening. They're sort of like, what?
Right.
It's odd.
Or they eat in front of an entertainment device or something.
Right. Yeah.
No, we eat together every night.
Yeah.
Watching
along
the Simpsons
with Bob Barker.
And,
yeah. Exactly.
But yeah, so yeah, I just grew up like that.
Uh-huh.
And I think sort of food was just something that was just sort of part of the everyday. That wasn't really, you know, it wasn't extraordinary in any way. And I was always helping my mother in the kitchen. So I've been in the kitchen from a very early age.
There we go.
But again, not thinking that that was something special. That was just, it's what you did. You have
just
to eat.
The way,
you have to
yeah,
eat. You have to, so you have to make your food, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's where that came from. And then that's just continued.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And Europe, I'm sure Europe probably has its own issues with healthy food versus non-healthy food as well, but they're probably not as pronounced as America.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's like 8 other podcasts, but no, I mean, I think it's very easy to generalize.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, all European, you know, to say one thing about Europe, there's a lot of different countries in Europe. So there's a lot of different food traditions. There's a lot of different types of food. There's a lot of different body
Many
types.
Different languages and
yeah,
cultures.
Yeah, it's all, you know. That being said, I think that nowadays many European countries are dealing with these sort of same public health issues that we are. And I think that you can see quite a significant difference in the last 5 to 10 years of, you know, the size of people that has increased.
Sure.
Definitely dealing with the same obesity issues that we are, definitely dealing with the same processed food issues that we are. So I think it's really easy to always say, oh, you know, Europeans eat better than us. There's a very different food culture that is much more based, I think, on whole foods and, you know, more to the source. But you go into a French supermarket and looks like an American supermarket.
Right, right.
Okay. That doesn't mean that everybody shops at the supermarket. And, you know, they certainly have, I think, sometimes access to, I think, vegetables, sort of the basic stuff, vegetables, meat, et cetera. That stuff always tends to be cheaper than it is here, because oftentimes here it's, you know, you go to the store and it's like, well, you can buy a head of broccoli for $5 or you could go get 18 hamburgers.
Right.
I think that the idea that sort of healthy food, quote unquote, in the U.S. is slightly more expensive is really odd to a European.
Mm-hmm.
Because to a European, it's like, well, you just have to eat. So, you know,
right.
You make your meal from basic products. But yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely changing. And, you know,
does it have to
try
do
very
with...
hard not to stereotype and generalize.
Yeah, totally.
Does it have to do with sourcing, though, as far as do European food? And yeah, this is also like a gross generalization. I'm realizing now.
It's okay. We're good at that.
But as far as like American food sources generally don't come from America as much. You know, our avocados, for example, are from Peru. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, they're not local. Yeah.
I'll apologize for that in advance.
Hey, but, I mean, there's a line about that in the book.
Okay.
Like, I mean, you're not growing your own coffee beans in your backyard.
That is true.
So choose your battles, right?
Yeah,
right.
Definitely. You know, I had a friend who was actually talking about taking like I don't know, 100-mile challenge or something like that, and basically eating food that was only produced in our bioregion. Which meant, I mean, at first that sounded really great.
Yeah.
It sounded like a good idea, but he said no coffee, no oranges. Yeah. We get apples, but we don't necessarily get like pineapples, for example, or anything else that I kind of take for granted. Wheat, I mean, there's a certain amount of grains produced in eastern Oregon, but there's not a whole lot. Yeah. So,
well, I think the second you start talking about eating locally, eating seasonally, that's super sexy. And you can slap that on a menu and that will immediately draw a crowd. But
it's like
if you actually want to eat local and seasonally at home, you're going to be sacrificing quite a bit. And I think that at the end of the day, you kind of have to choose what your food policy is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, certain things you are going to buy and certain things you aren't going to buy. And you try to always make better choices.
Sure.
But there's some things like coffee that chocolate, for example,
sure,
that some people just aren't going to give up. And so at that point, you just have to choose, you know, the best of what's out there.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you draw those lines for your personal choice? Do you have, I'm sure you enjoy coffee.
I do. Well, it's funny. A friend was making a joke this morning about how whenever anybody joins for a work party with me, it's just loud music and another French press. But I love coffee.
Yeah.
But I think that I once heard that, I can't remember who said it, if I read it somewhere, but it basically said, you know, if you want to, you know, put your money in the right place, the first two things in terms of food, the first two things you need to look at are chocolate and coffee.
Okay.
And those are two. So coffee is actually the second largest, traded commodity after globally after oil.
After oil.
Yeah. It's huge industry. And so coffee and chocolate are two, and I mean, chocolate obviously as well.
Things that are dark and bitter and sometimes cause sadness.
Exactly. those are two things that you sort of have to pick the best of the best,
uh-huh,
because the cheap, bad versions are really bad.
For sure.
For the people that are producing them.
Yeah.
And I think those are definitely two places where you can choose to spend $2 more. And
sure,
and that's actually very, that's an important $2.
Yeah.
It's and similar, so for me, I eat a lot of chocolate and uh-huh, I drink a lot of coffee. And those are two things that I've chosen not to give up. So for me, it's really important to, buy from companies that I know that are working with, you know, producers and directly and paying them a decent rate and, you know, all of these things that
I think it helps to understand that chocolate and coffee are somewhat, as far as food goes anyways, luxury items.
Definitely.
I consume coffee daily.
Right, but they become everyday items, but they really are luxury items. You don't need them by any means.
Right. And so, I don't know, if I come to it with that understanding, I'm more apt to spend that extra couple dollars per pound, for coffee.
For sure.
Does that make a mocha the most luxurious product you could possibly buy?
Yes.
If you're combining coffee and chocolate together.
Yeah, but if you talk to a coffee snob, they're just going to turn their nose up. I mean,
right.
You would do better to get an espresso and then eat a small bit of chocolate on the side.
Then you're making
at
your own mocha.
At least 70% cacao.
Though. At least.
Of course. Yeah. I was thinking, somebody was talking about a statistic related to Walmart and how Walmart famously refuses to pay living wages to their employees, or at least the minimum wage they're paying them doesn't cover their basic costs of living and all that sort of thing. The idea that someone proposed was like, you know, if Walmart was to pay their employees $12.75 an hour, something like that, a decent wage at which they could kind of make a good life for themselves without having to look to external sources, they would increase most of their products on the shelf by about 50 to 60 cents, something like that. And my numbers are not right there, I know, but it was something on the order
something
of...
Something marginal, though.
Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah.
Like if you were just to hand the greeter when you walked into a Walmart $2,
right,
that's basically what you're doing on your average purchasing. And it wouldn't cost them that much, wouldn't hurt their business, probably would do better for PR.
Certainly.
So we're talking about a very similar dynamic where it's only, say, a $2 difference in the price of the coffee that you're buying, but it makes a huge difference in the quality of the lives of the people that produce it, in the care for the ground that the coffee grows in, and the communities that all that stuff is located in. So, yeah.
Well, and I think if you look at percentage of income that we spend on food, we spend very little nowadays compared to 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
We spent much more money. Our parents and our grandparents' generation spent a much larger percentage of their income on food. So we've chosen to spend money on other things, and the amount of money that we actually spend from our paychecks is really small.
Right.
Which is an interesting thing, because at the end of the day, you have to eat to live. So
generally speaking,
yeah.
Yeah.
So food really is an investment, not only in the community and, you know, the people that produce it, but it really is, I mean, it's that's your health insurance, right?
Right.
So to me, it's an interesting thing that, that people sort of scoff at, oh, that's, you know, 50 cents more expensive or whatever, because
I'm going to save money.
It's food. It's like, you wouldn't put bad gas in your sports car.
Right.
Like, God forbid.
Maybe
right?
in your Pinto, but not and in your
yet,
sports car.
Yeah. And yet, like,
I am my sports car.
Yeah. And yet we like fill ourselves full of things that are really bad for us and that we know are bad for us. I just read a really interesting statistic that was, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something like, 20% of Americans think that fast food is good for them.
Right.
I.e., really? Yeah, like it's a small percentage of people that think that it's good for them. But about 80% of Americans eat fast food at least once a month.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that excuse 100 times. So, I know it's bad for me, but
I know it's bad for me, but I'm still going to do it. And it's like, well, okay, that's your personal choice. But at the same time, then we're really upset about this food system and we're really upset about food politics and there's all these terrible things happening. Well, at the end of the day, it really does come down to personal choice.
Totally.
And yeah, you can have the argument that like your one choice of buying coffee from whatever isn't going to change the world, but it kind of is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if we all made a choice to not go get fast food, knowing all of the bad effects that that has, not just on us, but the community and the environment. I mean, there's a whole, you know, like just go buy Fast Food Nation and spend a weekend being depressed.
Exactly.
Like we know that it's bad and yet we choose to not make those choices because I think food is very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And so to make an emotional change is really difficult for people. And it's hard to say because those things are very addictive.
Yeah,
that's
for sure.
That's proven that those companies have there are addictive things in those foods that keep you coming back for more. And so there's that sort of that dilemma, I think, between emotions and then also rationality, because we know it's bad, but we do it anyway. I mean, that's a struggle for most people,
sure.
I think.
I mean, well, this may not be a direct relation, but kind of like cigarettes, you know. Most people who smoke cigarettes know cigarettes are bad.
Totally
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And as a consumer of cigarettes, I will say, yes, I realize that is the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, another thing that doesn't grow within 100 miles of my home. So, yeah.
It used to grow within 15 miles of your, less than a mile of your home.
I used to grow it in my backyard, but it didn't work out so well. So,
it kind of stank.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was, I believe Freakonomics Radio recently had a segment that they talked about. The question posed that is McDonald's, you know, standard hamburger like the most nutritious food you can get or something like that? The idea that all the nutrients needed for someone's daily diet is there. And that may be the case, but you also can't live on cheeseburgers and be reasonably and relatively healthy.
Well,
so.
And I would say that I think that's often a problem that I think is pretty frequent in the U.S. We get really hung up on numbers. And in terms of food for us is like it's a diet thing, right? Like food is a numbers game. It's I need this many calories per day and I'm intaking this, but I'm output is it. It's like we're calculating all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of food being this like holistic process that's just part of our day, that's something that we do with other people.
Right.
Food is something that we eat because we have to eat. And because of that, you know, we have to figure out what's best for us and we have the food pyramid. And it's like, and so we're instructed
which
and we're
is bullshit,
taught.
Right?
It's total bullshit. Yeah. Yeah, of course. That's like paid for, but it was paid for by the lobby.
Yes.
Like obviously. And so we have this sort of idea of like what's healthy and what's not healthy. And at the end of the day, it's like, we've totally lost this perspective of you eat together as a family, you spend time together, you talk, it's social, you buy your meat from the butcher that, you know, cut the meat, you have a conversation. Like, there's all these other things that come into play. And then above and beyond that, there's also like the environmental aspect. I mean, there's all these other things. And so at the end of the day, sure, maybe the numbers wise, you are getting the calories that your body may need from that hamburger. But there's so many other, you know, externalized costs, number one. But then number two, just like all these things that are just not factored in whatsoever. It's like the whole idea that you're better off eating a hamburger in company of people when you're happy and socializing than eating like carrots and hummus by yourself. I mean, the idea being that
that was my meal this evening. Yeah.
But the idea being that when you're like depressed and you're not doing so well and you're not taking part
you're
in a community,
you're not going to process it.
Like
as
those
well.
Are those things that are really hard to calculate. And I think it's easier for us to say, well, okay, I know a hamburger is bad for me, but there's 18 other layers to this stuff, and that's I think what makes a discussion about food
difficult. It's hard to quantify experience.
Yeah, very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the more we move away from the numbers game and think about the total experience, not just like what are the calories, even if you're talking about nutrition, like am I getting enough carbohydrates or fiber or something like right. that? But if you move into the shared experience, probably does a lot to make the experience of food more healthful. Right. I was just thinking about shame foods. And oftentimes when I'm eating something that I know I shouldn't and I'm eating far too much of it, it's by myself.
By yourself.
So, yeah. So sharing the act of food or the act of eating the substance of food with other people.
Well, and the whole thing about how if you socialize mostly with healthy people, you are more likely to be healthy.
Right.
And if you socialize mostly with overweight people, you are more likely to gain weight.
I guess I'm in trouble.
You need
I work
friends.
With a lot of overweight
That's
people.
That's the idea that being right. that you sort of adapt. I mean, you do what your friends do. Yeah.
Right.
And you, because then, you know, whatever they're eating, you sort of, you do that as well. Mm-hmm. And then at some point you do, yeah, you feel kind of bad.
Yeah.
So you do that in private.
Well, no.
Or, I mean, maybe you don't, but that is an interesting thing as well, that we sort of adapt to what our friend group does as well.
Sure. Yeah. Well, let me expose myself completely. I'm thinking of
Please
the experience. When I'm just done driving the school bus in the morning and I get off the school bus, walk into Grocery Outlet, and I buy a bag of corn-based chip products. And I sit back in the bus, and no one's waiting for me to arrive anywhere. I have this two-hour break before I have to go back to work. And so I open the foil bag, and I eat everything in the foil bag. And then I say, shit, that didn't feel very good. It seemed like it would. I kind of like the taste, but it tastes terrible now that I've had the whole thing. And there I am. And that's not a shared experience. It's not, I would be ashamed to share that, but I just did. So no.
But
yeah.
if you shared said bag with other people,
I wouldn't eat as much.
You wouldn't eat as much, but it'd be a whole different experience. Too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be getting down on yourself. And emotions really play into our digestive systems mm-hmm. as well. Like the amount
so.
Of emotional stress or
yeah.
the amount of emotional gratification we get
yeah.
while we consume.
Yeah, totally.
Well, if you look at Coca-Cola has a big campaign right now, which is share a Coke.
Oh, right. As opposed to drink a Coke yourself.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. It's like
yeah.
share and it's
That's because each bottle
that.
Is two servings.
Yeah. There we
but
go.
But it's like, but it's playing into that emotional thing
yeah.
of, you know, I mean, I guess you could argue that they're trying to encourage people to, you know, take part in the community or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's a marketing campaign. So
yeah,
they are
sure.
just trying to sell more Coke bottles. But it's definitely playing into that emotional side of there's the act of sharing something. I mean, food is the one thing that we all do.
Right.
No matter where
without
we
exception.
Live, without exception. Some people have access to less food than others.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, no matter what culture you go to in any part of the world, at some point during the year, a family is gathering around food to eat it together.
Right. Right. It's one of the
That's
most foundational things.
That's the one thing that we all do.
Yeah.
All of us. So, and yes, some people do not have very much. And maybe that gathering is around one bowl of rice for 12 people.
Right.
But there is a gathering. And I think that's something that's easy to forget. And I think that's food is sort of a unifying factor.
Yeah. I like that. Well, we've got the oven preheating, so we should probably go in there
yeah,
and make
yeah.
some food.
Let's unify in the kitchen.
Let's
Sounds
do
good.
It.
All right. All right. Let's see. So we've got some avocados yes. here.
Cool.
And I assume if there are four of them, we don't need to make them all now. But I figured out of four, there must be at least one that's appropriate to
yeah,
eat
yeah,
at this
the
point.
Ripeness. Yeah.
yeah. So what else are we looking for in utensils? I know we want to cut them open.
So we're going to cut them open, and then we want a spoon because we need to scoop out a little
all
bit.
All right, sounds
and
good.
And then we need something to put them in.
Let me sneak this drawer open.
And ideally something that has edges because ultimately a little egg ends up spilling out. A
little egg spills out, so a baking pan perhaps, or...
Yeah, that's
or
great.
Or a casserole dish.
Or a casserole dish.
Okay. What say the glass one there?
Yeah.
All right.
Perfect.
There we go. And then I'll bring the cutting board down here, I guess. Beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And a knife. That might be overkill, but I like the way it looks.
No, it's great.
Maybe I'll set this
up.
Do
you want me to do this,
toast.
Or do you want to do it so that you feel empowered to do better?
I should do it so I feel empowered.
I think
that's a good idea.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
About this dish specifically, but also my policy to cooking in general, is like... I think most people are intimidated by food because they don't know what to do, and I think most, like,
if you look at the food world, it's like all these top chefs, and you know, everything has to be super specific,
yeah,
and we're really focused on 8 minutes only in the oven, and it's like people are just like, I just want to make something, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, this dish is like, it looks cool once it's finished. You serve it to someone, they're going to be moderately impressed.
Totally.
You really don't have to make that big of an effort.
Yeah. And it's also...
And it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But you probably don't even have to look at the recipe.
All right. Should I keep this open?
I'm just saying, I'm just saying, in general, it's definitely the kind of recipe that you can sort of take whatever you have in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Mix it in and
simple
good to
enough.
Go. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
Pop the book open with a metal utensil, because that's heavier. French press. All right. So we've got some avocados. Just, I guess we'll find out what's inside of them.
Say, I would just do two, because you're going to end up with four.
There we go.
Yeah. Because you get two per avocado, obviously, since they're
halves. Right, right.
And I mean, most people will eat a half. Because once you have a half of avocado and an egg,
it's pretty
protein rich. Like, you're kind
of
done.
That's a lot of stuff.
So, let's talk about what would be the ideal avocado for this. Like, do you want one that's fairly soft, or do you want one that's...
I think you want one
firm?
In the middle. I think an avocado that's too firm is just sort of bad in general. I mean, it does soften up a little bit just because it gets warmed up.
This one feels super soft.
You can definitely have medium to really ripe.
All right.
Because at the end of the day, I mean, it's called a baked egg and avocado. You're basically warming up the avocado.
Right.
You're
not
necessarily.
If it's a little bit underripe,
yeah,
it's not going to
You're not doing anything. You know, you're not mixing it and then turning it into something else. You're pretty much just warming it up in its skin.
All right. So we've got two avocados deep pitted. That's a pit, right?
Yep.
De-stoned. And so eggs are going inside of them,
so
right?
At this point, the only thing with this is that depending on what size your eggs are,
mm-hmm,
and what size the avocados are, sometimes I like to scoop out a little bit extra.
Okay.
Just because the egg will overflow,
sure,
which is fine.
Right.
But to sort of make sure that you get most of the egg in the avocado, just take out a little bit extra in the center. A little of the avocado.
All right. Prepare a side plate for the extra avocado because that'll be tasty later, I assume.
Exactly. That's like the thing you just eat while cooking.
Right, right. And I'm trying to think of how big an egg would be.
That's
how much,
probably perfect.
Is that a decent size there? All right. So
I think actually in the book it says, depending on the size of the egg, some of the egg white may spill out. Don't stress about it.
Okay. And that stress is one thing we want to avoid, right?
Yeah. Well, I think most people get stressed out because, especially if you find a photo, like a recipe on the internet, it always comes with a really gorgeous photo.
Yeah,
right.
You know, it's
which
like,
are doctored anyways.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like there's a little part of it in focus, the rest of it's blurry, it's probably wrapped in twine, and there's a rosemary sprig next to it.
Right.
And then you freak out because your thing doesn't look exactly the same. But that's fine because those people that put that together made that recipe 18 times and then they spent 6 hours photographing it.
Yeah.
We just need to eat, you know?
It's true. And I do love food photographers. Some of my best friends are food photographers.
And I take a lot of food photos.
But it doesn't have to look perfect.
But I think a lot of people get intimidated because of that.
Yeah.
There's actually a really funny website called Pinterest Fail.
Pinterest.
Oh, yes.
So Pinterest, of course,
okay,
the website that's sort of known for
crafts,
very photo-heavy crafts,
yeah,
food. But there's a hilarious thing called Pinterest Fail where someone basically takes the Pinterest photo that they saw of the craft or the recipe and then posts a photo of what they made.
The actual
and
thing.
It's pretty hilarious.
All right, so I'll throw these avocados into
yeah.
the dish and then cracking eggs into the middle.
So here's where you can, you do whatever you want.
Yes.
Some people I have known have put stuff in the avocado first.
Ooh.
Like you could put salsa in,
uh-huh,
whatever. And then some people put stuff on top.
Okay.
And it's just a personal, I tend to just put the egg in and then put stuff on top, but
right.
it doesn't matter what order it kind of goes in.
Okay, so we're going to do the goat cheese thing, so that...
Perfect. That, I think that can go on top.
Okay, on top with the egg.
Mm.
And we've also got the basil that we're going to use.
Perfect. So we can chop that up a little bit.
Easy enough. That means I need to go harvest some basil real quick.
Are you good at harvesting basil, Aaron?
It is.
All right.
I'm distracted now.
You're also good at pruning basil.
Which is important, because otherwise it stops growing the way you want it to.
We did some
of
that a couple days. That is kale,
nice.
Actually.
We just put that in, and we're hoping it keeps going.
It will.
I hear
pretty hearty kale.
Yeah, I heard kale just keeps going and
unless
going.
Unless you have a pigeon that decides to lay an egg in your kale pot.
Has that happened to you?
Yeah.
Really?
I had pigeon debacle 2013.
Yikes.
A few weeks ago, yeah.
That's kind of exciting and kind of...
No, it was moderately traumatizing.
Okay, yeah. So it was there a nest
yeah.
in the kale? Okay, the pigeon was there like full-time, 24/7.
What happened is the pigeon sort of kept... So I live on the fourth floor, and I have pots sort of hanging from the guardrail outside of the window.
Uh-huh.
And lots of, like, plants going, and had a bunch of kale going, and there was this pigeon that kept showing up.
There we go. Thank you, Aaron.
Is that enough?
I think
yeah,
that'll do.
It's just garnish, really.
It's a tasty garnish.
So this pigeon kept showing up, and told a friend, and he said, well, you know, if a pigeon sort of keeps showing up, it's because she's going to lay an egg.
Okay.
And he's like, you don't want a pigeon baby outside of your window.
Seriously.
Did some research online, talked to a lot of people. The ultimate consensus was, whatever happens, if eggs get laid, you have to get rid of the eggs, because... Like, city pigeons are not nice, like,
oh, yeah.
countryside beautiful birds. City pigeons are notorious for carrying lots of diseases, and just ended up hearing all these horror stories of, like, somebody letting a pigeon lay eggs, and then they hatched, and then, like, the apartment ended up getting mites, and
oh,
they get the entire...
Oh, yeah.
And so it was just turned into this thing, and it was like...
Wild animals carry all
wild
animals.
We thought totally horrible for having to remove said eggs.
Sure.
It was like there was sort of no other option, because I wasn't about to deal with, like... And then they also, that's their home from then on out.
They just kind
of
so hang
they
out.
Still hung
but
out
of
there.
Course, the pigeon had laid the eggs in the one pot where the kale was doing really well.
Oh.
And had just made a complete nest
so
in it. And so just had to remove the whole... Well,
okay.
I mean, one, the kale was crushed, but two, once a city pigeon has been sitting in your kale, you really don't want to eat that.
Right,
really,
right.
It's not really sanitary.
I bet they're worse than cats.
Yeah, I mean, I just did some quick... You know, internet research, and of course, the internet never lies. So,
yeah,
trust everything.
If it's
read.
On the internet, it must be true.
Must be true. Yeah, I mean, everything I read was just sort of horror stories of bad things, and I was like, I can't deal with this.
That sounds
of
kind
course,
of
me being the food person, when I told friends, they're like, so, are you going to make an omelet with the eggs? That's very, like, urban foraging. I was like, nope, don't think so. Just want to get rid of them.
I don't want parasites.
No, it's...
The eggs themselves would have parasites, I assume?
Well, I don't know.
You
I just feel like city pigeons, I mean, when you see them going through trash, you just don't know. That's
right.
Just not something I'm about to...
Well,
I just don't want to go down that path.
Right.
With wings.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so I got basil in the avocados,
perfect.
And now I'll crack the eggs.
Crack an egg
and
one egg in each avocado. For each
all right.
Half of an avocado.
There goes an
see,
egg.
See, here's where...
Oh, no, it's spilling out!
It's ruined. All right, beautiful. Egg number two. You want to crack any eggs? Make an omelet?
No, we're not making an omelet.
That one might already be cracked in the thing, actually. There you go.
Oh.
I feel like you're a better egg cracker than I am, Aaron.
I don't know.
Oh, there goes some white and some shell. But now it won't flow over.
Oh, that one went over. All right.
There we go.
Tell us what we're doing wrong.
That's great. A little bit, like... Salt and pepper and goat cheese on top. And
there we
go.
Sounds
yeah.
good. So you're going to put the goat cheese on and then we'll melt it in the
yeah,
oven
just
along
sprinkle.
With everything else?
Yep.
All right.
Just all goes at all at the same time.
Sounds good. We got goat cheese.
Perfect.
We got goat cheese. Open that up and we'll spritz away to our heart's content. So we were talking about cheese and cheese in moderation, I assume,
yeah.
is a decent thing. How much would you put on here?
I mean, it's a garnish at the end of the day, but it really is whatever you want. You can't.
Right.
It's like you can't fail at this. Whatever you do is correct.
All right. Well, that's good news to me. We'll start with a little bit and call that awesome.
But this is a really good recipe that's good to do for brunch if you have a lot of people coming over.
Yeah.
Because you can sort of do it, pop it in, and everybody gets their own individual serving.
What I like about this is it looks fancy.
Yeah.
It does.
But
you...
Yeah. Super
simple.
You
doesn't look like a pancake.
You cut an avocado.
Yeah.
And took the pit out and put an egg in it.
Right.
Like we're not doing rocket science here.
All right. So in the oven for how long was it?
Like 15 to 20 minutes.
15
you
to
could
20.
Throw
all
some
right.
Salt and pepper on there. Just
oh,
to...
right. Salt and pepper.
And honestly, this is a recipe where you can... The base is the egg and the avocado. And after that, you can do whatever you want. I had a friend that sautéed mushrooms and put them on there.
That's a good idea.
I've done scallions, which is really good.
Yeah.
A little bit of roasted garlic. But whatever.
Just think anything that you really want to eat as a savory brunch item.
So this is the culinary cyclist.
Yeah.
We haven't really talked much about the bicycling aspect yet, but there are some interesting tidbits that you had in there.
Well, I think the idea was to write a book that was, the way I've sort of described it is it's a cookbook for people who enjoy life on two wheels.
Okay.
So the idea is that you like transporting yourself around, you like hanging out with your friends, you like maybe riding your bike and going to a picnic, you like things that are transportable.
Right.
Nobody's roasting turkeys and, you know, transporting them in their cargo bike.
Yeah.
The idea was, I like cycling, and I think sort of two-wheel lifestyle goes well with sort of be conscious about what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is.
Yeah. One of the things I remember reading was the idea that you don't have to go shopping with a cargo bike or with a Subaru or whatever. Like, you don't have to buy it all at once, which...
Well, and I think that that's... I mean, obviously, we're pretty lucky to be in Portland, where that's really easy. Not everyone lives in a central area where biking to a market on a daily basis is an option.
Right.
You know.
Works
and,
well
and
for city life.
Yeah, that's... I'm not going to pretend that people need to bike an hour...
Right,
one way every single day to go to their grocery shopping. Of course not. But I think the idea is that even when people do live in urban areas and do have access to things, I think there's still this mentality that we have to, like, stock up.
Right.
You know? Like, I need 5 gallons of mayonnaise or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, that's an interesting thing. And that's, if you want to go back to the European conversation, I think that's shopping in small amounts for one meal is more of a European tendency, I think.
It's more typical.
Because here we have, you know, we have the Costco's, we have the,
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of bulk shopping. And when I mean bulk, I don't mean walnuts and almonds. I mean, I mean like 5 gallons of ketchup.
Right, yeah.
And sure, if you have a family of 12 and you're hosting a barbecue
and
for
really
200
like
people over the weekend and you love ketchup, that's probably a really great option. But most people don't really need that much ketchup.
Right. Unless you got a killer deal on it. But even then, we're talking...
But then you get back to the question of need. What do
right.
we really need?
Right. And no one needs that much ketchup
no.
all
no.
at once.
Did we look at the time when we put those in?
You know,
just
let,
as
me,
a reference.
Let me check
I mean,
the
not,
time now.
Again, it's one of these recipes that you want to shoot for about 15... I say 20 in the
okay.
book, because that's sort of the egg is...
It's
if you are nervous, if you are nervous about undercooking your eggs,
salmonella.
Go longer on the recipe.
Okay.
I personally like my eggs a little bit runny, so I'll often undercook a little bit, but that's a personal thing.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to judge. The only thing that's hard with these is that it's hard to tell because the yolk just sort of looks the same.
Sure.
Throughout the whole process, because I've looked at them a couple times before and thought, oh, it still looks kind of like glossy, and I don't know, it's probably not cooked all the way.
Right.
And I take them out, and
it's
like
it's completely
just
solid.
Hard, you know. But I think most people like to err on the side of cooked egg rather than
sure.
I don't. But that's a personal thing. So
yeah.
In the book, it's sort of the 20-minute recommendation is a fully baked egg.
Easy enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So, tell us about your bicycle. What do you ride? What do you like?
What's your grocery getter?
Well, this is complicated because, I recently left Portland.
Oh, okay.
So, in Portland, I have just an old Peugeot. Used to be a 10-speed, now it's a single-speed.
Was it vintage?
Yeah.
Like 1970s-ish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just got it as a super heavy steel frame from a friend of mine for not very much money. Turn into single speed because it's a town bike and, you know, that's just easy. And that's what I like to ride around.
Okay.
But, you know, it's always kind of cracked me up because I do my grocery shopping with a backpack.
Oh, sure.
Not panniers or anything fancy. I just got to get to the store and buy some food,
uh-huh.
you know. So sometimes I feel like I'm not officially, like, a cyclist. But I don't own a car. So
sure.
I guess that would... make me
you kind of are officially
a cyclist yeah.
then yeah.
So that's my bike here, but I in January actually moved to Paris. And
okay.
In Paris, I don't have a bike, but I use the bike share system.
Yeah.
So they've had that bike share, which is called Vélib. And they've had that since 2007.
Okay.
And it's actually a pretty extensive system. I can't remember how many stations are around town, but it's
a lot.
So that's what I use.
And you find you don't need to own a bike then, living in Paris.
I mean, the thing is that in Paris, you're going to risk getting your bike stolen.
Ah.
And it's pretty nice to not have to deal with that.
Seriously.
That being said,
okay,
it can be a hassle sometimes because there won't be any bikes left at any of the stations within a close proximity to you. And that can be kind of a hassle. And
yeah,
at those times, you're sort of like crying on the street corner and like really missing your bicycle.
Yeah,
but I think it's not the kind of, unless you have bike parking in your building and then maybe your office space, wherever you're going, unless you have specific bike parking in each of those places that's sort of secured and not just street parking, it's just not a city where people like to leave their bikes.
Okay.
Sort of overnight, or you just
sure
be smart about it. But
are the thieves pretty industrious?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I actually don't know anyone that owns a bicycle themselves.
Okay.
Like, most people do bike share because it's just super easy. And the thing about biking in Paris is it's actually pretty difficult.
Okay.
So
it's not like the best city. It's
I mean, have you guys biked in like Manhattan?
I never have. No.
Okay. I mean, it's like there's like city biking in Portland, and then there's like big city biking with
sure,
like taxis, buses, like, you know, everybody craziness.
Right.
It's just a different thing. So you just have to be pretty aware.
Well, the roads out east are designed totally for cars. You know,
I have bicycled in Boston,
yeah,
and it's gotten a lot better because that's where Adele is from, and I think first time I went out there was 2007. There wasn't a lot of infrastructure. The roads were in pretty bad shape.
Yeah.
It's gotten a lot better. There's a lot of bike lanes. So Boston's probably not the best comparison for Paris anymore. But Bike Snob loves to talk about New York cycling conditions,
right,
and the bike share that's there, and how
yeah
you can never find a bike at any
right
of the bike share stations. But Paris, anyway, has some... The traffic, the roads are not necessarily super
yeah, I mean,
exciting to ride on.
They definitely put a lot of effort into the infrastructure
mm-hmm
for this, and they put a lot of... Velib, like the system, they just came... So the city of Paris, which then runs it, they just came out with a Velib guide to Paris. So it's a full book in French, and there's an English version that's sort of a cycling guide to the city, because
sure
they really want to promote biking, which
okay
is great. And that being said, there's definitely plenty of sections in town that have a separated bike lane.
Mm-hmm.
Often what happens in a separated bike lane is it's part of the sidewalk, and there's just a lot of people because it's a big city, so you just have to be super attentive of pedestrians crossing and not looking to the bike lane.
Sure.
And then you also have what we have in Portland of just the sort of painted thing on the street, which doesn't, like, yeah,
it's,
there's
it's
a
okay,
lane
but,
painted,
yeah,
but, like, it's just a...
It's not,
white,
a, it's not a barrier.
It's not,
yeah,
it's not a barrier.
Yeah.
So there is that. So I think there's, in terms of European cities, I mean, you know, look at like Copenhagen or like Gothenburg. I mean, look at sort of these Scandinavian countries or Amsterdam that are much better about having very specific bike lanes.
Right.
You know, you often have the parked cars as the barrier between the bike and the street.
Which is a decent way to go.
Which is a decent way to go, yeah. So I think in Paris sometimes there's a lot of places that are really great to bike, and then there's a lot of places that are so-so,
that's
and you just have to pay attention.
Yeah. This is a stupid question, but do you ever ride with a baguette in your bicycle basket?
I haven't recently. Well, it's funny because I actually don't eat a lot of bread.
Okay, so that
yeah
that answers the question.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's funny because I have a friend that loves the idea of like people cycling with baguettes.
Yeah.
And so whenever I see somebody cycling with a baguette, I always snap a photo of
make
it
a Tumblr
and send it to him. Yeah, because it certainly happens.
Bikesandbaguettes.tumblr.com.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
If it's not already made, we're gonna make one.
Right, for sure.
Nice.
Yeah, but it's funny because a good friend in Paris. Her sister lived in Portland for a long time, and we have this joke of Parislandia.
Oh.
Because Paris has a really big hipster scene, and there's
I
a lot of sort of, there's just a lot of Portland in Paris sometimes, and it's actually kind of humorous. Like, you just go to some places, and you're like, whoa, you know, like, you've got these tight pants, and you're on a fixie, and, like, you have the, like, knapsack, and, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just really hilarious, because, you know, it's Paris, like it's not Portland. And,
yeah,
but
would it
so
be
we
Portland
like
with less
Paris
bacon?
Idea. Yeah, but more like foie gras.
Okay.
Yeah.
More goose liver.
More goose liver. Yeah.
The dream of the '90s is alive in Paris. If there was a way for me to translate that, I would totally do it. I suppose Google can help us out.
I think it's Lay Dream of the 90s.
Exactly. Well, it's funny because I just met with a journalist the other day who was writing a story on les tendances vélo, like the trend of cycling.
Okay.
And so she's like, oh, like, you're from Portland? Like, Portlandia, and I was like,
you have
a
things
Parisian
to contribute.
That knows about Portlandia, like,
yeah,
you know it's bad when
I'm
you
so
know?
Ashamed. Yeah,
and she just was really excited about it, and she just kept asking all these questions about Portland. She's like, so is it really like this? And I was like talking about Portland. She's like, I want to get on a plane immediately. Like, okay, that was pretty funny.
I assume I will never have Fred Armisen on the show, so I can just say Portlandia is bullshit. I mean, it's funny.
You mean all these calls into the hide-and-seek league that are not being returned to me? They're not going anywhere?
I'm sorry to disappoint you, sir.
Man,
dang it.
Fortunate.
I was so close. I thought I was really going to make it this year.
The thing that I was disappointed by was not necessarily, like, I was also disappointed that it was a sketch show instead of, like, you know, I guess it has recurring characters, but they're not like, there's no like story arc.
There's no development.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I love development with my stories. So there's that. But there's also just the idea that like now anytime I meet anyone who's not from here, that's the only thing
they
know about Portland.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I like Portlandia. I like watching it. It's funny. But it's kind of like going to a Dave Matthews concert. Like, you know, it's decent music. I won't knock on the music too bad.
Yeah. Some of my best friends go to Dave Matthews shows.
Well, so that's the thing, though. It's like they're fans, man.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the reverse where I hate the Grateful Dead, but I love Deadheads. So,
right.
Yeah.
Where are we at time-wise?
We are at 7:17.
Oh.
Whoa, they're looking pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd go for a little bit longer.
All right.
I think we'd stick to the 20. Just, you know.
Easy enough.
It's a good venture.
Okay. I feel like there was another thing I wanted to ask about, but it's escaped me. What else have we not talked about yet that's in your purview? Best interviewer question ever.
Wild card.
Yeah.
Wild card. Well, there's a lot of kale in the book.
Okay.
That's fun.
You're a kale fan.
Yeah, I'm sort of obsessed, but, you know, in a rational way.
Sure.
As long as the quail's doing
it. Yeah, as long as the pigeon's not in the kale. What else about the book? I mean, I don't know. I think it's, at the end of the day for me, I like food, I like sharing food with people, and I don't think that food has to be something we need to, like, go crazy about. You know, it's like, it doesn't have to be a stress. It should be fun, and making good food that people enjoy doesn't have to take 8 hours in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So really, the idea of the book is like, let's think about what we eat, because that's really good for us, and it's good for our community, and it's good for the environment.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's not go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's be reasonable human beings. We all work, and we all have time constraints, and, you know, and I think that the idea of sort of combining bikes and food is like, well, most people reading this already ride a bike. Certainly somebody that doesn't ride a bike can definitely get this book, but I think the person that wants to get this book is sort of loves bikes.
Yeah. This is
and
not bike evangelism.
Yeah, no, and if you already ride a bike, then you've already chosen to sort of slow down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because riding a bike is slowing down a little bit. And I think that then that's a sort of natural progression to thinking about what you eat, making your own food, choosing to buy things locally. And I think that sort of, that transition makes sense.
Yeah.
And
you're like, this is sort of some good next steps in that realm.
Yeah, and
slowing
I mean, the
down.
Title is... what's the exact wording? Is the cookbook and companion for the good life.
There we go.
So the point is, like, we have to enjoy life, right? And I think that a lot of people that ride bikes very frequently will tell you that they ride... Most of the time, it's not just because they want to save the environment. You know, it's
right.
like, people ride bikes because they like riding bikes.
Right.
And they like riding bikes with their friends. And they like feeling the wind on their face when they commute to work in the morning, because it gives them a space to think about something else, you know? And so it's the idea that let's celebrate that sort of those simple things in the everyday and just appreciate them. That's what that book is.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of the recipes that somebody described it as a collection of, you know, the author's favorite recipes, which is true. Like, these are just all things that I make pretty regularly.
Sure.
And, you know, some of them are healthy, some of them are not healthy, some of them have, you know, avocados and quinoa in them, which are obviously not local products. I'm not going to tout this book as 100% local seasonal because it's not.
Right.
But it's just things that I like and things that my friends like.
And things you can make without too much stress or fuss.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I liked the idea of talking about hosting and having people
mm-hmm.
over. Make a dish that you already know how to make.
Yep.
Don't get in over your head when
yep.
you have guests coming,
yep.
which I thought was a good idea.
Yep.
Because that's probably what I would be tempted to do if I felt just a little more comfortable.
I think that's a pretty common thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like people come over and you say, okay, well, we're going to do a dinner thing. And if it's not a potluck, if you're hosting a dinner and you're making food, I think a tendency is to go for the, I need to impress people.
Yeah, they've never
really
had foie gras before.
Yeah, and really often it's like, oh, what am I going to make? And it's like, instead of making the thing that we know how to do and can do quickly,
yeah.
we opt for complicated, and all of a sudden we're like chopping 18 herbs to put in the curry because like we never experimented with the curry beforehand,
really?
And now we can't talk to our friends, and then now we burn the curry, and now it's a total disaster.
Right.
I mean... So it's like, yeah, just the point is to eat good food together with friends.
Right. This is about the people, not the food.
Yeah.
Even though the food is a big, important part.
Right, yeah, but it's bringing the people together. So
yeah.
if, yeah, and you don't want to, you want to be able to spend time with those people and
mm-hmm.
enjoy the food, but if you're doing something new and different. So that's, I just think that's a really common tendency for people
yeah.
to take on something. I mean, that's sort of the classic, like, Thanksgiving thing, right?
Sure.
Like, I'm going to host a Thanksgiving dinner, you know, for my friends. And then somebody is, like, launching into roasting a turkey and trying, and they've never done a bird or
yeah, yeah.
meat before, and they're trying to make stuffing. I mean, it's like, okay, but that's great. And sometimes that process is really entertaining.
Yeah.
But I think it's just being reasonable about what your expectations are.
Sure. Totally.
And if your expectations are to serve people food, then you should
serve
probably make something that you know you can serve.
Growing up, the rule in our household was Thanksgiving and Christmas were not the times for experimentation.
Yeah,
those
exactly.
are the times for the tried and true casseroles that everybody knows how to
right.
make.
Yep, and I think that's why you end up with food tradition as well. Because I think that those are times that are sort of known for being hectic and stressful.
Yeah.
And I think our... You know, our mothers and grandmothers and fathers and grandfathers, because a lot of them cook too.
My dad knew how to carve a bird.
Exactly. I think that they stick to sort of those recipes because they know that they're trying to serve dinner for
sure.
however many people. And it may take a long time in the kitchen that day to make a lot of dishes, but they know that those dishes are going to come out of them.
Right.
And I think that's why you end up with the same things every year.
Maybe it would be fair to say that it's okay to jump into the deep end, but wear a life preserver?
Exactly.
Or something like
yeah.
that? Okay.
Yeah.
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 Nice. The other thing I was thinking of was show up with a bottle of wine, which
always.
Is never a bad idea.
Never a bad idea. It's always a good idea. Well, I mean, unless you're showing up at a dinner party with people that don't drink, in
right.
which case you should probably bring some sparkling water.
Exactly.
Or
yeah.
some lemonade. Or
yeah.
I don't know. I think that when somebody hosts and when they make dinner, they've put a lot of time and energy
mm-hmm.
Into that, and I think it's really nice to respect that and to bring something that
yeah.
then is an addition to the meal or something that honors the person that put time and effort into organizing it. Because not only are they cooking, but they also took the time to bring certain people together.
Yeah.
And, yeah, well, who says no to a bottle of wine?
Totally. Yeah. That's easy, especially for someone who doesn't do a lot of cooking. You don't show somebody up by bringing another dish as well, which I suppose would be a good thing about
right.
wine.
yeah.
And it'll pair with something, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I think we're just about to the point where the eggs ought to be done.
Perfect.
So,
let's hope so. And, you know, here's another thing I should note for maybe people that don't cook a lot, is that every oven is different. And some ovens go hotter, and some ovens go colder. And if you cut in to your avocado and it's still a little runny and you don't want it, you just put it back into the oven. It's not...
It's true. Like,
you know, when a cookbook, like when a recipe says 400 for 8.5 minutes, you might need to have it at 375 for 10, but you just, you know...
You find the thing that works.
You just gotta figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's okay, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
This looks delicious.
Well, shall we try them out and see what happens?
Sure.
They're going to be pretty warm from the get-go.
That's true.
So the avocado is kind of hot, so this is a warning to not burn your tongue.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I'll sneak into this silverware drawer again.
Yeah, and I think if we cut into one of these, we'll see that...
The consistency.
Ooh.
Oh, so these are a little bit runny, which is
okay.
good, but this
go.
Is
yeah,
healthy
that's,
runny.
That's the perfect
Beautiful.
Amount
That's the
runny,
perfect
right?
amount.
Not salmonella
yeah.
runny.
No, that's great.
That's good. Spoon?
Thank you.
Even do the civilized thing and serve them in something.
Now, have you thought of, like, maybe whipping or scrambling the eggs beforehand and then pouring them?
No, but I've had other people say that, and
yeah.
I think that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And yes, one should do that. I mean, avocado is often a thing, you know, you get on, like, an omelet or...
Sure, sure.
So I think it's just a different way of putting it together.
Kind of an inversion or something?
Yeah.
Do you guys have a preference on which one you
eat?
There you go.
Since you're handing this to me,
yeah.
I'll take this one.
All right, so beware of the molten avocado.
Yeah. Well, and the egg's warm too, but...
Mm. Yeah, that's excellent.
Okay, so as a person that's not necessarily used to cooking or not necessarily a lover of cooking, how do you feel about this recipe?
I feel proud of myself that I was able to whip up something this classy. And all it took was a knife. Yeah.
You know, there are certain recipes that are more like a science, which would be bread. Because bread can be very difficult, depending on what you're making.
Sure.
And it has, there are a lot of variables.
Okay.
But that's why most recipes, in my opinion, should be followed sort of as guidelines. And then you just have to tweak it for whatever.
There we go.
For brunches, like, people get really excited about is, it's just really easy to bake eggs and things. Another sort of brunch favorite of mine is to do bacon cups.
Mm.
If you're a meat eater, that is. So you just take muffin tins, and you just line the muffin tin with bacon. So you basically just take a strip and, like, line it, and then take one more to kind of fill out the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And same thing. You just crack the egg in there. You can put the bacon in for a few minutes
there
ahead of time to crisp it up a little bit. But then, yeah, you just crack the egg in there. You can put some, like, onions or something underneath or some garlic. And same thing. Just sprinkle it with whatever you have on hand.
That is a great concept.
And then pop it in,
yeah.
And you get these, like, I mean, they look like muffins, but it's, like, bacon with egg inside.
But it's all protein.
And it's awesome. It's all protein. Yeah.
I was thinking this is also a good, like, if you are trying to scale down your consumption of wheats and grains and such.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good breakfast that doesn't have any bread.
Yes, for sure. Well, and this is, I run a lot, so this is, and I like to run in the morning. So I like to make this, like, after I've come back from a run.
This avocado, is it a lot of protein too?
B vitamins, potassium,
okay.
Saturated fats.
Yeah, okay.
Are you reading the label on the avocado?
So an avocado is really good for when you're trying to switch out things. Like, you can use avocado to replace butter
mm-hmm.
in baking. And you can also use it, like, it's really good to make a vegan chocolate mousse. Just use melted chocolate and basically, like,
ooh.
Just put it in a food processor and mix it all together.
Wow.
And it just makes this kind of creamy. It's really good.
Avocados.
Nice.
Full on vegan
ingredient.
You know? What else? I mean, it's good in smoothies. Again, avocado is one of those things, like, it's not local. Like, it's obviously not growing back here in Portland. So,
right.
Consume in moderation.
They do make them in California, so.
Which
right.
is fairly local.
It's closer than it could be.
Right.
Although these ones were made in Peru. I'm satisfied. Thank you very
good.
Much.
Yes,
yeah.
Good.
Well, I'm glad you guys liked it.
I kind of feel bad for eating before the podcast. No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
how dare you?
All right. Well, it's been about an hour, so we can cut you free.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys have any more questions.
I think I've got a lot to chew on, so to speak. Do you have anything?
I've got nothing, but... I do commend your suggestion of cardamom in coffee.
Oh, yeah.
That is something I discovered independently.
And
when I read that in your book, I was like,
Someone
else.
Actually, winner.
And it's actually in some countries in the Middle East, they do that. Yeah.
That's how I used to have Turkish coffee.
Yep, there you go. And then also, I was reading in a cookbook the other day that throwing in a tablespoon of ground ginger into your coffee, which I haven't tried, but sounds really good. So basically you would just take a tablespoon of, or, you know, plus or minus, depending on how much of a spicy taste you want, but just throw that in with your grounds if you're making French press or, like, a bialetti or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's kind of fun. And same thing with cinnamon is really good in coffee. But it's just to...
Just liven it up a bit.
Yeah. You're not completely changing the flavor. Obviously, if you have a really good coffee.
Right.
You know, you don't necessarily want to change the taste of it. But, yeah.
But if it's old coffee at the bottom of the 10-pound bag that you carried in on your cargo
you
bag.
You want, like, 5 tablespoons of
spices. Awesome.
So we were talking about an event that's coming up.
So for people that love bicycles, there's a release party for the book in conjunction with the really popular book that Ellie Blue published last year, which is the yoga and cycling book. They did a re-release of it, so it's the second edition. So the author Kelly and I are doing an event together at Powell's on Monday the 26th, and it's the Powell's on Hawthorne. So it's going to be kind of a reading and talk about inspiration for the books and that kind of a thing. Yeah, it should be a fun collection of people, and then we're doing an after party at the Suite Hereafter. So, of course, biking to a vegan-friendly bar.
That's right.
Seemed the only appropriate way to celebrate this book.
And there will be beer and booze.
Exactly.
And gluten-free alcohol, perhaps.
Perhaps.
If Harvester is being served there. But yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. So yeah, so anybody that wants to come out for that is more than welcome. So Monday the 26th at 7:30.
There we go.
Calls on Hawthorne.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good. I'm trying to remember. We might be able to pop in after we tape our episode.
Oh, yeah.
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 That sounds awesome.
Just ride right over there.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it'll be awesome. Yeah, and if you don't make them at Pals, there's the after party. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Be there all night.
Sounds good.
trying to find it on the
try
Powell's,
the veal.
On the internet.
Find it on the Powell's website. Unfortunately, Powell's, if you are listening, your site is not very mobile friendly here.
It happens. Yeah.
It is on the website totally though.
Cool. Well, we'll
if
find
you're on a computer.
Yeah, we'll find a link and put it up.
Awesome.
I was just thinking we should get the yoga author to like walk us through some yoga steps.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be cool. She's doing a very cool bike
Sprocket
tour
Injures
of
themselves.
The book.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so check out. You can all Ellie's website has all the information for all of her books.
That would be elliebluepublishing.com.
I don't know if she has the new one up yet, but it's definitely takingthelane.com.
Takingthelane.com.
And that was the right. That is still
the
name of the zines that she's doing. But yeah, all the event information is on there and all the book information. So anybody
Excellent.
That wants to know more about the books that she's been publishing and my book as well as Kelly's book, it's all there.
Beautiful. Excellent. And we'll have links to that as well.
Yeah. And then also I'll say that if people do like the recipes that are in the cookbook, I have a site called Foodie Underground. Which
dot
I
com?
Maintain. Dot com.
All right.
Yeah, so Foodie Underground, it's sort of all about good people, good food from good places. Super basic, keep it fun, just have a good time in the kitchen.
Fantastic.
Do a lot of kale, so people can check that out.
All right. Oh, well, thank you very much. And since I've got the kale growing outside, we're going to have to find something to do with it.
Perfect.
Are we ready to close out?
Let's do this.
All right, sounds good. Thank you again, Anna, for coming in and talking to us.
Thanks so much.
Oops. Shit. There it is. Your favorite thing just happened again.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write to us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. You can also message us or text us at that number. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Also, thanks to Herbird for our headline sounder. Find them at herbirdmusic.com.
All right. Beck eggs. Eat kale. See you later.
Go to
Bye.
Bed.
Show
I hope it was good, Aaron.
Aaron
was
apparently
Where did you
was
go?
Sitting with a 50-yard stare in Laurelhurst Park and
just not focused on anything.
Oh, stare like
I'm just staring off into space.
Oh, okay.
This would probably be better if I was on mic for this because if I'm going to tell this story on the podcast, I think like all the listeners should hear this.
But
yeah, so I'm sitting on this log on Laurelhurst Park, and
there's
I'm
a
just,
log.
It's hidden.
Okay.
It's a secret log.
It's a secret. It's my own secret log.
There's trees, but
in the mud. Well,
yeah.
Anyways, and I'm just like spooning like with bread, but spooning hummus into my mouth and just kind of like, it's all mechanical, not even conscious of anything. And then at one point, I just like everything comes into focus, and I realize I've been staring at this couple that is about 100 yards in front of me, making out this whole time.
And you just finally realized
it. I just finally realized it. Luckily, I don't think they saw me. But at that point, now that I'm conscious of it, I'm like looking everywhere but straight in front of me. It was just really uncomfortable for a while.
That's
right.
So funny.
It's like the magic eye.
Where
and like
go?
You're trying to see the
right.
thing and the pattern
right.
and then
the,
all of a sudden
the schooner
you can't
came
see
into focus.
Yeah.
And now it's right.
I didn't
in front
want
of
the
me.
Schooner. Yeah.
That's really funny. Yeah, I was actually just gonna come in and like cook myself some food because I'm so hungry. But
yeah.
now I feel great.
I have some hummus in my pan, yeah.
Oh, thank you. The panier. I was
I
eating
no
coffee.
But it's dirty hummus
because
he watched people while he was.
That's right. You can have some of
this
my makeup hummus.